Hello, Health Investor. Welcome to another episode of the Health Investment Podcast. Today, you're going to hear from Kim Schlag. Kim is a personal trainer and nutrition coach who came to fitness later in life. She spent the better part of two decades yo-yo dieting, ending up obese and utterly confused. In her early 40s, she finally discovered that the secret hack she'd been looking for all those years really wasn't so secret after all. She totally transformed her body and mind through proper nutrition and strength training, and now helps women all over the world get strong, lose weight, and heal their relationship with food and their bodies. In the episode, Kim shares how to navigate weight loss amidst hormonal changes in your 40s, 50s, and 60s, how weight loss when you're over 40 is different from weight loss in your 20s, the importance of protein and strength training, and more. If you're liking this podcast, I'd be so grateful if you'd write a review and share it with a friend. Enjoy the episode. I'm Brooke Simonson, certified nutrition coach and your host of the Health Investment Podcast. If you're ready to look and feel your best without any confusion, frustration, or stress, you're in the right place. Each week, I interview experts and share no-nonsense, research-backed tips so that you can finally lose weight for good, eat healthy long-term, have the high energy you crave, and feel like a million bucks. I'm so happy you're here with me today. Don't forget to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Hi, Kim. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Health Investment Podcast.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Brooke. I'm really excited to be here.
I think weight loss, nutrition, fitness after 40, there is, as you know, such a huge community interested in learning all the things about this. And what I'm excited for you to share is evidence-based tips. So we're not going down any type of restrictive diet rabbit hole. You have to do this. You have to do this other thing. I love your content. You stick with what works based on what research suggests, what science says. You keep it simple. And I just can't wait to share actionable tips for all of those women older than 40 who are looking to feel their best. I know that this is going to be a hot episode. It's going to be a much downloaded episode. Can you start off by telling us what led you to become a personal trainer and a nutrition coach?
Yeah, sure thing. So like a lot of women of my generation, you know, born and raised in the 70s and 80s, I was steeped in diet culture. I was not overweight growing up, but as a teenager, I definitely had this recurring thought in my mind about wanting to lose 5 pounds. As an older teenager, I can go back that far and remember like wanting to lose a little bit of weight. And, you know, I was really into the fashion magazines. And so I was to be like, you know, I don't look like them. And so I spent a lot of mental energy and time trying to lose some weight that actually I didn't really need to lose. In my 20s, also trying to lose 5 pounds. By the time I turned 30, I was pregnant with my first of 3 children. I gained 50 pounds. And unfortunately for me, I gained 50 pounds with each of my 3 kiddos, never fully losing that weight before getting pregnant again. And so by the time I was in my late 30s, I was struggling with obesity and still had no more nutritional knowledge than I had had when I was trying to lose weight unsuccessfully, you know, back in my early 20s. I still didn't know what I was doing. And I did what a lot of women do, which is like look in the magazines and go to the bookstore and get, you know, whatever book du jour by a doctor who's saying, try my special diet. It was always something crazy. And I would do these things and have varying levels of success. Success meaning I would lose some weight, but also meaning I would then gain it back and often gain it back and more. And so I spent several years losing and gaining more weight. By the time I hit my early 40s, I had lost a bunch of weight, but was still really unhappy with how I looked, could not figure out how to actually change the shape of my body, how to get weight off and keep it off. And I was introduced to, number one, strength training, which is really what kind of got me into thinking like, ooh, it was the first time I actually had seen my body change in a significant way. Like even when I had gotten to my thinnest on these diets before, I never looked like I did after I started strength training. And then I learned about nutrition science and evidence-based nutrition, and putting those two pieces of the puzzle together was able to completely shift how I looked and how I felt. I had never identified as an athlete a day in my life. Anyone who knew me in my earlier years can attest to that, until I was in my early 40s. As I made these changes, I was doing this in a public gym, and a lot of women would come up to me and ask me questions and be like, what are you doing and how are you doing that? And so I just kind of started helping people a little bit at a time, whether it was with their form or answering questions about how I was eating. And after enough people said to me like, hey, you should do this as a job, I was like, I was a stay-at-home mom at the time. I was like, well, maybe I should do this as a job. And so I looked into like, how would I do that? And I got certified to become a personal trainer, studied nutrition, got certified in nutrition, and started taking on clients. And little by little ended up, because I was a woman in my 40s, just as I was on social media, which kind of I fell into why on earth I was doing that, but kind of shared my own perimenopause journey. And the more I talked about that, I realized my clients were mostly shifting to be women in their 40s because that's who was relating to me. And so I didn't set out to be like, oh, I'm going to be the menopause trainer online. Yeah. But it just kind of happened because those women reached out to me and I felt comfortable with them. And I could relate to the situation they were in, both like how like the diet culture they were raised with, as well as like the symptoms they were facing as they're trying to lose weight now in their 40s and their 50s. And they're like, what's happening with my body? And so that's how I come to be where I am.
Awesome. As you were talking about the magazines in your teens and 20s, I had a flashback to all of those workouts. I can't even tell you how many of those workouts I probably cut out where it was like flat abs in 7 days or, you know, lose 6 pounds in 6 days, all of those.
Oh yeah. And they're so bad. Even today, I will tell you, something that I still do when I go to the grocery store and I see like that Women's World magazine. First of all, I often take pictures of the cover to share on my Instagram stories to kind of chat with people about, and then I hide them.
Yeah.
I'll get like People magazine and hide them. We're like, nobody needs to see how they're going to lose 40 pounds by Christmas when Christmas is like 12 days away.
Yeah, right?
And,
I know.
And the magazine just came up. It's just such nonsense. And it's always been that way. Uh-huh. And after, you know, being just, you see that message enough, you start to believe, one, other people are seriously doing that. There must be something wrong with me. Uh-huh. Right. Who's been there before. And two, you start to think like, there's got to be some secret I'm missing. Uh-huh. And that's where I was for a really long time. I just knew like I was missing something special that other people knew about and I didn't. And in reality, all I was missing was like, actually, how does nutrition work in my body?
Totally.
And some strength training. That's what I was missing all those years.
As you're saying that, it's almost like the secret is science, right? Like following the science.
That's exactly true.
And we're trying to find some secret superfood or some secret dietary pattern. And it's really just the secret is science. And then to elaborate on that, science really says it's kind of consistently doing what probably in that world of all of these shiny objects would be considered boring actions day after day.
Yeah, 100%. It's learning what those boring basics are. And then actually, for a lot of people, the trickier part, that's actually really hard. Once you uncover what the evidence says works, wow, it's like such a light bulb can go off in your head. The trickier part is then how do I actually use that in my own life as an individual with struggles and time commitments and, you know, a brain that tells us all kinds of things that aren't true about ourselves. Like, how do we actually make these things become behaviors in our life? And so really spending a lot of time on that piece, like the actual behavior change piece, that's the other part of the magic.
Mm-hmm. We're kind of alluding to some of the misconceptions out there that we've learned from magazines and different diets over the years. What would you say are some of the most common ones that women in their 40s and beyond believe about nutrition, fitness, weight loss, any of the things? What are the like, kind of hot misconceptions you see circulating right now?
Oh gosh, there's a lot. I think kind of one overarching one is that our best years are behind us. Like once you've reached midlife, that you've lost your chance to get fit, that you kind of blew it already, that getting older equals inevitably a decline with fat loss specifically, that our age is preventing us from losing weight. You know, at this age also, we've been through all of the things, all of the nutrition fads, you know, like sugar is the thing making you fat and cutting out carbs is the key. And intermittent fasting is a must. And what else did I miss? Low fat, like all of these kind of fads. And for different people, they're kind of stuck on different ones still, right? Depending on which one really hit home. A lot of people are like, well, wait, I really did lose weight when I went low carb that one time, right? And so it's still in their brain that if they can just get back to doing that, that that's going to be the thing that works for them. So all of those things are really, they're big.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned age as a misconception. Can you tackle that in greater detail? If someone's listening and they think, no, actually, Kim, it's harder for me to lose weight at 45. It's not as easy as it used to be when I was 25. And I actually do think my age is inhibiting me at this point.
Yeah, well, I would say you're not wrong that there are things that make it harder. For sure, there are. But what's really important to know, it is not anything specific about your body and your metabolism. It's more about your lifestyle. And that is such an important distinction to make. Because if you're going through this process and you're constantly thinking, well, the problem is my metabolism, it's slowed, it's broken. What are the other words people throw around out there in their advertising that we need, that it needs to be revved or something, mm-hmm. right? That there's some problem with your metabolism. It's going to send you to focusing on things that actually aren't what needs to be changed. And so what's really impactful for people to learn is we have very good science. I mean, it's only been a couple of years ago now, there was a fantastic meta-analysis about our metabolism as we age and what is really happening. And this was such a fantastic piece of evidence that we needed to see, because up until that time, you know, as a coach who works with women of a certain age, right, I work with older women, but I've worked with women in their 20s and their 30s. And in my mind, I always had this idea of like, okay, like our metabolism supposedly slows somewhat. Nobody could tell me what by what amount, like you couldn't find a number. It was kind of accepted by everybody, like even evidence-based coaches, that there was some kind of slowing. And some people would be like, oh, it's like 20%. And I was like, there's no friggin' way, because I work with women in their 40s and 50s and I work with women in their 20s. And my women in their 40s and 50s who are losing weight are not eating 20% less. That's crazy talk. So mm-hmm. I knew it wasn't that much. But, we were kind of all like, you know, maybe there's some slowing. Well, in actuality, what this study showed is that between the ages of 20 and 60, our metabolisms remain stable. There is no decline in our metabolism, not even a slight decline. It's not until after age 60 we start seeing a small decline, and it is small. So if you're over 60 listening to this, don't think like, oh gosh, woe is me. It's very small, but there is not an age-related metabolism slowing. And that's really important to know, which isn't to negate the fact that you feel like, wait, but this feels harder to me. Come back to what your lifestyle is like now. Like, what is different for you now in your 40s, in your 50s? Do you have a lot more responsibility? Likely yes, right? It's not like when you were in college and you got done class and then you had hours to spend however you want. You've got people depending on you. Maybe you have kids. Maybe you have a spouse. Maybe you have an aging parent who you need to take care of. You're doing things for the community, your church, the school, right? The job. So you've got all of this added pressure and time commitment. Maybe you are not moving as much, which we see is the case. Most people are not moving as much now in their 40s, their 50s and beyond as they were when you're younger. You're not likely chasing little children anymore, right? I'm not. I used to spend a ton of time on my feet with my kiddos. You're not as active as you once were. And so when we can become more active, when we can tune into how are we eating now, because we're spread so thin with all of our responsibilities, we can still lose weight and be successful just like somebody in their 20s or their 30s.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. I saw a study that was really speaking to this, that it's more age and lifestyle factors than it is your metabolism or hormones or whatever. And it was showing that weight gain is prevalent amongst men and women in their 40s and 50s. So often the message is spread, again, to kind of some of these people who are targeting your metabolism in your 40s. So if somebody's saying your metabolism's broken in your 40s and 50s, they're probably selling some type of supplement or detox tea or whatever that they want you to buy. And they're really speaking to women of, women, this is so hard for you. It's your body. Your body's betraying you because you've hit this certain age. But if you look at the research, it's happening to men too. And so it's more correlated with these lifestyle factors than it is anything broken within us as women.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
What would you say then, if weight loss is similar to when you're in your 20s and 30s, if someone's in their 40s and 50s and 60s and they want to lose weight, What do they do? What should they be focusing on?
Excellent question. Well, the one important thing to note is that most of it is going to be exactly the same as what I would tell somebody who's not in their 40s and 50s. There are some things, especially for women in menopause, that we definitely want to talk about. But most of what I'm going to tell you, it's going to apply no matter what your age or what your gender. And the baseline for everybody is understanding energy balance. This is the key. Calories in, calories out is the bottom line answer for what determines whether we maintain our weight or gain weight or lose weight. If your calories in are higher than your calories out, you're going to gain weight. If your calories in are lower than your calories out, you're going to lose weight. And if they're the same, you're going to maintain your weight. Now, it's important to note there are many factors that can impact one side, the other, or both of those. Hormones, for example. How satiated you are or aren't, how hungry you are or aren't. This is impacted by our hunger hormones. So I'm not trying to say like hormones don't matter or nothing else matters but calories, but those things still work within the energy balance equation. And so really embracing the idea that it does come in down to calories in, calories out is bottom line for people to be successful and understand why they're successful so that it can be repeatable. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel like some like magic fix, right? Any diet that's ever worked has worked because it's put you in a calorie deficit. You might not have known that that's why it was working, but that's why it worked. And so really that's the baseline to start from, is really understanding that energy balance equation. Another nutrition consideration for women over 40 who want to lose weight is really paying attention to protein. That is such a big one. Do you want me to kind of go into that a bit?
Yes.
Awesome.
I want to take a quick break from the episode to tell you about a company I've been impressed by for years. Thrive Market is an online shopping platform that offers thousands of products at 25 to 50% off retail prices. For just $60 a year, you get access to a wide variety of premium pantry staples, supplements, beauty products, and home goods at unbeatable prices. To put things in perspective, I save about $20 to $30 per shipment, which means my annual membership fee pays for itself after just two orders. My favorite part about Thrive Market is that for every paid membership, they donate a membership to a low-income family, veteran, or teacher. So not only do you save money on your purchases, but you also make healthy products accessible to everyone. To read my full Thrive Market review, steal my shopping list of over 150 items, and save additional money on your first order, visit thehealthinvestment.com/Thrive Market or just click through the link in the show notes. Now, back to the episode.
So protein is super important for many reasons. As we age, we lose muscle. Starts in our 30s, in fact. We lose muscle as we age. It speeds up during menopause. Dieting itself can cause loss of muscle. And we don't want to lose muscle. We need our muscle to be independent as we age. Like, it's going to take muscle to get up off the floor, to get up from a chair, to get up from the toilet. I say all the time, like, I want to be a woman in my 80s and 90s who can get up off the toilet by myself. And I'm going to need muscle to be able to do that. It's also important to have muscle to be metabolically healthy. Increased muscle mass increases our glucose uptake and it improves our insulin sensitivity. So to be metabolically healthy, it's important to have muscle. It's also important in terms of aesthetics. The look a lot of women are chasing with weight loss, like that losing the last 5 or 10 pounds, is actually on the other side of building muscle. So it is super important to have enough muscle, and we can prevent that muscle loss and even build muscle by eating enough protein and strength training. Mm. And then the other way protein helps, especially when we're talking about weight loss, is that protein is the macronutrient that keeps us the fullest. And so if you're in a fat loss phase, hunger can, you know, that can really derail your plans. And so eating enough protein, it's going to help you stay fuller, and it's going to help you, like I said, build and maintain your muscle mass. Super, super important.
Okay. So understanding the calories in, calories out equation. So being in a calorie deficit, eating enough protein. What else would you say are critical actions to take in your 40s and beyond to not only strength lose weight, but keep it off? Okay, straight. Let's talk strength more about that. Yeah.
We can't skip over that one. It's so huge. It's going to be huge for looking the way you want to look. It's going to be huge for feeling better. Like I said, being metabolically healthy. It really is super important. And a lot of people are like, well, I've done exercise with weights in my hands before. For a lot of women, the exercise they've done, which no knocking it, it is better than not moving, doing any kind of exercise. It's also can be a good introduction. Like if you're in some kind of class and you're holding weights, but you're moving fast all the time and you're going from one exercise to the other, that's not actually strength training. Still a totally valid form of movement. I think it can be a great introduction to being comfortable at the gym and being comfortable with weights in order to build muscle so that you can be successful like at how you want to look. Because a lot of times when people are like, I want to lose weight, they have a certain look in mind, they have a certain size in mind, they have a certain pair of jeans they want to fit in, and building muscle is going to be a big piece of that. In order to actually use strength training, resistance training as a tool to do that, we're going to need you to bring more intent and focus to your lifting that you're not going to get in that kind of class format or watching a video. To really be successful with strength training in this way, you're going to want to take dedicated rest breaks between exercises. So not trying to constantly keep your heart rate up, not constantly trying to work up a sweat, but really focusing on moving through a full range of motion with every exercise you're doing, whether it's a squat or a lunge or a chest press. You want to move through a full range of motion. You want to use a weight that is heavy enough for you so that it feels hard. And again, by hard, I don't mean like your heart rate's up or you're sweating. I mean, like it is hard to get that weight up. Think about it if on a scale of like 1 to 10, think about having your exercises be at an 8. Think about like the level of effort an 8 would be so that you're really having to push hard in those training sessions and then really focus on making progress over time. So week to week, think about like, can I lift more weight for the same number of reps? Can I do more reps with that weight? Really focus on that progress. It's going to be incredible, the results you're going to be able to see from an aesthetic point of view even.
Mm-hmm. If a woman's listening and they have some free weights at home, is that enough to get started and to do what you're describing?
It can be. The trick is often a lot of the times the women I start working with who have weights at home only have little light weights at home. And still, I would still say, let's have you start with those because the first thing you want to get down when you start strength training is form anyway. So how do you do a proper goblet squat? I want to see you do that without weight anyway. Wait, we want to get that form down. So each exercise, you know, a dumbbell row, you can use those little light weights and perfect your form. But then in a really short period of time, and I'm talking days to weeks, not, you know, months, in days to weeks after you start practicing your form, you're going to want to start loading that up. So if you can absolutely, I have tons of clients like who permanently work out at home. My members, I would say it's got to be at least half and half work out in a full gym versus home. The key is to get enough weight in your house. So we're not talking just like 20 pounds and under. You're going to want 25s and 30s and 35s and 40s and 45s. And if you're like, what am I going to do with those? I promise your lower body exercises, you're going to need that kind of heavy weight, ladies, very soon after you start lifting your lower body. This is big, strong muscles, like your glutes, your quads. Those are big old muscles. You're going to need those heavy weights. So absolutely, you can train at home. I don't like when people are like, you can do it with soup cans. That's absurd. You can practice with soup cans to get started. During the pandemic, did I have people using cans? I did. Because again, we got to use what we can, but that's not a good long-term approach.
Does somebody need a personal trainer? Or you mentioned maybe not doing videos or gym classes. Are there any reliable videos or programs to follow when you're getting started at home?
Yeah, you do not need a personal trainer. A lot of people, I do think it's a good idea if you can go to your local gym and be like, hey, can I get like one or two introductory sessions? And I will tell you right now here, ladies, you don't need to have them forever. You could go and say like, I would like to have a coach teach me how to do a goblet squat, a Romanian deadlift, a push-up, a row, on a lunge, and a bridge. Make sure I know what I'm doing with those. Take a session or two, have them show you that, have them watch your form. And then you're good to go. Like when you know how to do those basic movements, you can build off of those. And if you're like, I don't even have the money, or I live somewhere far away from a gym, you don't have to do that. I've worked with so many women. We've done it all online. You can take those same exercises. You can find, if you go to my Instagram page, one of my highlight reels, those little bubbles, is called New Lifter Start Here. You can click on that and I walk you through all of those exercises. It'll take you to various YouTube videos I have or old Instagram videos, and it will show you Here's how you do a lunge. So you can watch that. Now, the next thing I'm going to say, you might hear this, ladies, and be like, I don't want to do that, but I'm telling you, it's key. Watch the video of me doing the exercise, okay? And then practice. And then take your phone and film yourself. Like, you don't need somebody else in the room with you. Just literally, like, lean it against your water bottle or against your wall. Film yourself from the side performing the exercise. Do, like, 5 or 6 reps and then watch it back. And then compare with my video, right? And see, like, okay, is my knee moving in the same direction? Like, what are my hips doing? Like, look and see. Like, that's what a personal trainer would do for you. Obviously, they're going to be more trained to do it. But you can absolutely compare and see, like, wait, do I look like she does? It is so important to see yourself on film or to have somebody else, like my clients, send me their video so I can do it. But you can absolutely do it for yourself. And so that's where I would start. Like, start with those basic exercises. Watch yourself doing it. You can start with no weight or very lightweight for things like it's hard to do a row without holding any weight. So hold a really tiny weight. Go ahead and do that. As soon as you're like, yeah, I've got this form down, that's when you start pumping that weight back up. And no, you don't have to have a personal trainer to do that.
Right. Calorie deficit, protein, strength training. What about daily movement, steps? How does that fit in?
That's the other big key here. So often people go to the gym, they get on their treadmill in an effort to burn calories. And I'm not saying that's wrong. Like, you're going to burn some, but it's just not an efficient way to go about burning maximum amount of calories. When we're talking about that calorie in, calories out, you're like, wait, what do I have to do with the calories out part? Calories in, honestly, through your nutrition, reducing the amount you're eating is going to be most impactful, but we still want to work with that calories out. The time that you're going to spend in the gym, no, unless you're like, I have all day every day to be like in the gym, walking on this treadmill, it's just not going to be nearly as much as what you can do just moving more throughout your day. And so shooting to get somewhere between 7,500 and 12,000 steps a day, if your goal is fat loss. If your goal isn't fat loss, you don't have to get up to 12,000 steps. For fat loss, I do have a lot of clients who it's really impactful to get up to that 10 to 12,000 steps. Now, if you're listening to this and you're like, good gracious, like, I'm almost sedentary. Like, I just sit at my desk all day and then I sit on my sofa at night. You can still make a big impact by starting with whatever your baseline is and just adding on from there. So my first suggestion would be to get a step tracker. I do like something that you would wear on your wrist versus just your phone. Because what often happens is people are like, well, I don't have my phone with me all the time. Well, good. Just pop, get a cheap one. It doesn't have to be a Fitbit. It doesn't have to be an Apple Watch. They have like $13, $15 ones on Amazon. Pop a step tracker on. Don't even change anything at first, but go a couple of days, like 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. How many steps are you getting a day? It's probably going to be really eye-opening. I did this when I first transitioned from being an in-person trainer to being an online trainer. When I fully made that transition, I was like, I wonder how many steps. And I was not tracking my steps at the time. I was getting like 3,000 steps a day as a personal trainer, which was a huge difference. Because when I was one-on-one with people, I was in my gym all the time and I was hauling weights for them and I was up and down steps. And now what was I doing? I was typing on my computer. I was filming it on my phone. And so it is that awareness piece of when you can see how little you're moving, that's a great place to start from. And then at your comfort level, start increasing. Well, we want to push you a little bit outside your comfort level, but it doesn't have to be a big leap. So let's say you test it out and over 3, 4, 5 days, you're getting 3,500. Let's move you up to 4,000. Stay there for a week, move you up to 4,500. Or if you're feeling like, okay, I want to do this in bigger increments, go for 1,000. Let's get you 4,500 and then 5,500. Really looking for chunks of time throughout your day where you can just squeeze a little bit more in. Can a dedicated walk help? Absolutely. Like, I think finding a time during your day that you could take a 20 to 30 minute walk, awesome plan. You don't have to start there though. If you're like, I'm really busy, I don't know if I can do that. Fine. Let's look at other ways. Like, you could do things like after every meal, I'm going to walk for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Now you've added 15 minutes in your day of walking that you didn't have before. You can then do things like whenever I'm on a phone call that's not a Zoom, I'm going to pace. That can get an office worker like a lot of steps. You do things like whenever I'm boiling the kettle for my tea or putting my lunch in the microwave, I pace around the kitchen. These little things can add up to thousands of steps across a day as you start doing all of them. And you don't have to do them all at once. There are loads of ways to sneak in a little bit of extra movement. And over time, you're going to start identifying as a person who just moves a lot. And it's really impactful for that calorie bottom line. Way more impactful than just being like, I'm going to go to the gym every day and get on the treadmill for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I relate so much to your story. I, for years of my life, was a teacher living in New York City. So tracking steps was not even a thing. I was like probably getting 12,000 a day, just living
easy.
My natural
life. New York
life.
City,
easy. I had a client in New York and I was like, you are so set with your steps. Yeah. Like, we don't even have to worry about this. And then I moved to California and became a nutrition coach working virtually. And I kind of thought in my mind, and we can all trick ourselves, I thought, you know, I'm still very active. Obviously not as much so as when I lived in New York, but I'm very active. Didn't carry my phone around with me all the time. Just, you know, thought I'm definitely getting a lot of steps. Bought a Fitbit last year. And like you said, I mean, it was abysmal. It was like 2,000 steps a day I was getting.
Yeah.
But I thought in my mind, I was getting 7,500, you know, so our best intentions can really trick us. And I had to be very intentional working my steps up. As you said, I do that exact same path with my clients where we add either 500 to 1,000 per week. And it is pretty incredible. Just the other day, a client said to me, I can't believe I used to be getting 3,000 steps a day. She's getting 8,000 now. And she said, I literally do not feel like it's that hard.
Yeah.
Because we inch her up so slowly. If we would have gone from 3,000 to 8,000, that would have felt overwhelming, frustrating. Yeah. But if you do it slowly over time, even just yesterday, I was at Costco. I parked in the very back of the parking lot. So got several steps just getting to Costco. Then you walk around Costco, then walking all the way back out. Just little things like that. Just park farther away or do an extra lap around the grocery store or Target or, you know, you probably end up spending extra money, but you're going to get those steps.
That is the danger. Before I had a treadmill in my house, I spent a lot of my winter hours, you know, walking around Target. I probably should have picked like Lowe's or something. I think I probably did end up buying. So pick a store you don't like, guys. You know, ladies don't
totally.
There's not as much there you want to buy.
Outside of hosting this podcast, I work as a nutrition coach specializing in evidence-based sustainable weight loss. If you're ready to stop yo-yo dieting and start living a healthy, active lifestyle you're proud of, I'd love to work with you in one of my programs. Unlike restrictive, one-size-fits-all diets that only provide short-term results, I help you adopt science-backed nutrition and lifestyle habits that work for your unique likes, dislikes, and time constraints so you can lose weight permanently, have high energy throughout the day, feel completely in control of cravings, and stay consistent long-term. To learn more, visit thehealthinvestment.com or follow me on Instagram and TikTok at The Health Investment.
It really is impressive how over time a person can go from being totally sedentary to like, it's just second nature to be active. Just like last week, one of my members in my group coaching, she has been with me as a one-on-one client for many years now. She started with me many years ago. She had already lost like 40 pounds on her own. And then she lost like 50 more with me.
Wow.
And when she came to me, she said, I'm really nervous about this moving piece. She's like, I just sit a lot. You know, she was in her 50s. She's like, I'm not working. I sit in my lounge chair in my living room a lot. And so she showed in our group a picture of her first training program from me. And I had written on there, your first goal, it was 4,000 steps. And I had written, I know this is a stretch for you. We're going to get you little by little moving more. And now she easily, for years now, has easily been hitting 10K and is just a person who just moves a lot. Like everywhere she goes, she just fits in extra steps and she goes on hikes now. And, you know, she went to Scotland and went on some like, you know, like crazy climbing up mountains and hills and with ease, going from a person who was totally sedentary. And it's really cool to see that in hindsight, to be like, I know 3,500 is a stretch for you. And now it's like, wow, like wouldn't even think about not getting anywhere close to 3,500. Like that's first 2 hours of the day.
Right. Yeah. I would love to hear your thoughts on the word motivated, because I often have clients tell me, well, I just don't feel motivated at the end of the day to go for a walk, or I don't feel motivated at night. I feel motivated for a couple weeks, but then that third week hits and I don't feel motivated to prep the foods I was prepping those first couple weeks. What are your thoughts on motivation and the part that plays in this whole journey?
Yeah, it's an important topic to discuss. And it's definitely something that I have evolved in my knowledge around and how I coach about motivation. The more I have learned about it, you know, I think one of the big issues is that people think of motivation as a feeling, right? And what they're feeling they want to do. And that's not exactly what motivation is. And I think it's important to remember that all of our human behavior is motivated behavior. You're not going to do something if you're not motivated, right? It's going to be there. The question becomes like, how much do you have, as well as what type do you have? And not every minute of every day do you need to feel motivated to complete your goal. It doesn't mean that you still don't want to do it or that you can't do it. You can actually create motivation, generate motivation on purpose. And so really tuning into, what are my thoughts right now? And what could I think differently that's going to help me actually achieve the thing I want, right? And so when you're like, I'm supposed to go to the gym tonight and I don't feel like it, I'm not feeling motivated. All right, what's a thought that you could actively put in your brain? I mean, that's an important thing for a lot of people. Like, what do you mean? Like, I just think thoughts. Like, how am I going to put it there? And some thoughts you do think. And right now you might be thinking like, I don't want to go to the gym. And you can ask yourself like, is that actually helpful for the goal I want to achieve? Well, it's not. So like, I can let that thought come in one side of my brain and go out the other. And I can choose to think differently. I could choose to think like, you know what? I'm just going to focus on putting my shoes on. Like, I'm going to put my shoes on. I'm sitting at my desk right now. I'm not even going to think about the gym and how I feel about the gym. I'm going to think about like putting on my shoes. And then you can put on your shoes. And then you can think about like, you could choose to think about like how good you feel when you're done a workout. You could choose to think about like, okay, my next step is just getting my water bottle filled. So we can direct our thoughts to places that are going to get us where we need to go without having that overwhelming feeling that we do have at the start of a workout. Like when we set out, when we like hire the coach or start the plan, we have this feeling of excitement and energy and we're jazzed up and this is going to be our time, right? You're not going to feel that way the whole time, but that doesn't mean you're not motivated. And it doesn't mean you can't create the actions that you need. You can really tune into like, what could I think right now that's actually going to help me do the thing that I know is going to get me the thing I want. And over time, if you're like, do I really want this thing? That's a really important question to ask. Like, do I really want to lose 15 pounds? Why do I want to lose 15 pounds? I mean, is that really going to make a big impact in my life? Maybe it will, or maybe it won't. Do I want to tap into like more specific reasons about what that would mean to me? Is it really about the weight, or is it about being a person who like is physically active? Maybe what I really want is to be a person who can run around with her kids more. Maybe I want to be a person who can like say yes to any adventure my friends come up with and know like I have the physical fitness to do it. Maybe that's going to feel more exciting to me. So maybe we're focusing on the wrong thing. So really paying attention to like what your actual goal is, and is it the thing you really want, and is it driving you enough? You know, for a lot of people, it feels like maybe fitting into that smaller pair of jeans is going to be the thing that keeps you going, when in reality, maybe it won't be. And so really identifying something that feels more personally meaningful intrinsically is going to be the key to actually helping you get there.
I think the point you made about changing the thought, you know, that thoughts might just pop up, but that's not the thought you have to run with. You could replace that thought with a different thought. I am very open on this podcast and in my group and with my one-on-one clients that movement is my most challenging piece. If we were looking at the whole puzzle, sleep, I've got down. I love sleeping.
Good for you.
Stress. Yeah, I just am obsessed with sleep. I'm into bed. I am just prioritizing that sleep. The nutrition part over the years has come more easily. Managing stress, working on my mindset, all of those pieces, I feel like I'm pretty good at. The movement part is a continual challenge. And I also think the myth exists out there that everybody who has lost weight, who is maintaining their weight, who is living some semblance of this active, healthy lifestyle, likes every part of it all the time. Mm-hmm. Because there are multiple days, most days, that I would rather cuddle up with a book on the couch at the end of the day, watch a TV show, then go for my dedicated walk or to pick up my weights. And I often have to replace the initial thought I have with one, two, or three other thoughts of you get to read the book after you do the weights, or, you know, 20 minutes, just do it for 5 minutes. I love the 5 minute thing.
Yeah.
I can trick myself into that all the time of just get your shoes on, go for 5 minutes. And if you're absolutely miserable, you can turn around. And I never do. Yeah. It's like the starting that's hard.
The starting is really hard. The starting is hard because when we're in a place of inaction, when we're, whether it's cozy on the sofa, or maybe it's like we're really into this project at work and maybe we're just like, if I just power through, I'm going to get so much further ahead. And so we don't want to stop and get down to the gym or get out for the walk. And so, yes, creating that action towards what we actually know is the thing that's going to change us in the way we want to can be hard. And so, you know, entertaining a different thought and not trying to say we don't have to like not have those thoughts anymore. It's not like you have to be a person who never has a thought like, oh, I'd rather sit at my desk right now than go outside. But being like, OK, my brain is telling me that I should sit here and keep working on my podcast script. Is that really going to help me reach my goal? Probably not, at least not the goal I'm talking about losing the weight or whatever it is. Like, OK, like what's a thought I could think that is going to help me? I could think like, oh, I could put on that book I really like and listen to it while I walk. Like, what's something I can think of that I can enjoy? Or, you know, I can do this for 5 minutes and I can come back. We could even think like clearing my head will help me have, you know, a better approach to this topic when I get back. And so really choosing with intention the things you're going to entertain in your brain and the things you're going to be like, all right, my brain's telling me that, but I don't have to listen to it.
Mm-hmm. Hormones have come up a little bit. And I'd love if you could just touch on, somebody's listening, they're in the thick of perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopausal, and they're thinking, no, really, my hormones are out of whack right now, and I feel like that is impacting my efforts. Is that true? Is that false? And if it is true, which hormones are we concerned about, and how should we be approaching this throughout that stage of our life?
Yeah, I mean, if you're in perimenopause and menopause, there's a good chance your hormones are impacting your ability to be successful at fitness and weight loss, but not necessarily in the way that you might think, as in now that I'm in perimenopause and my estrogen is declining and that now I cannot lose weight, or it's in fact causing weight to come on. That is actually not scientifically what is happening, but that doesn't mean it's not having an impact. It's having an impact in several ways. One of the ways it's having an impact is where your body tends to store excess fat. So we tend to store excess fat more in our midsection, probably not coming as a surprise to anybody who's listening, right? As our estrogen is declining, we tend to store more fat in our midsection, whereas perhaps before you tended to store fat more evenly spread across your body, or maybe more in your glutes and your thighs. Now we tend to store more in our midsection. It can feel rather abrupt to look down and be like, where did that belly come from? And it makes us think like, I just put on a ton of weight. And maybe you didn't, you just shifted where you've stored that fat. Mm-hmm. And it's important to note that the word is excess fat. If we have excess fat, we tend to store it more in our midsection. It's not causing us the change in our hormones, as our estrogen level shifts, is not causing you to retain more fat. It is just shifting where you store that excess fat. So that's one impact it's having. Another impact that menopause is definitely having on a lot of women is when you feel symptomatic, it makes doing all the things that we have just been discussing that much harder to do. And so, you know, there is a wide spectrum of symptoms you may be experiencing. A lot of women experience these to the highest degree in the late perimenopause stages. So you might still be getting your period as you're still having these. I'm now 3 years postmenopause. I'm still having multiple pretty intense symptoms. And so things that we're talking about, things like hot flashes, night sweats, lack of sleep, due to those hot flashes or due to just straight up insomnia. Maybe you have an increase in allergies, joint pain, generally just feeling exhausted. Vertigo, that was a huge one for me. All kinds of symptoms that can happen. And as you can imagine, if a person is dealing with any of these things, no matter what the cause was, does it make moving more, going to the gym to lift heavy stuff, does that impact your ability to choose the healthy foods? Absolutely. Imagine that you're low on sleep, your joints ache, you just had an explosive period. Like all of these things, like, does it make you feel like, you know what I want to do is go outside for a walk and come home and make a salad?
Yeah.
It probably makes you feel like I want to eat three bowls of Count Chocula and lay on the bed, right? And so it still comes down to calories in, calories out, moving your body, lifting the heavy weights. But now we need to help you navigate these hurdles. And so for some people, one thing that can be an appropriate tool is talking to your healthcare provider about hormone replacement therapy, menopause hormone therapy. For me, that's been a real game changer. I went through a period of time when I was 48 where I didn't get a good night's sleep for 3 months. Like I was having over a dozen night sweats per night. And so, you know, and I started to get to the point where I had anxiety about nighttime because I was like, oh my gosh, it's going to be another night of me laying in bed and bursting into flames and dripping wet and changing my clothes. I started keeping like a stack of towels and clothes by my bed so that I could like just quick change without disturbing my husband. And like, and it went on for months until I finally went to talk to my doctor about menopause hormone therapy. And once I was on it a month later, I was not having, you know, these incredible night sweats anymore. And I was able to sleep again, which was life changing for me. Other people, it's not a good fit for them for a multitude of reasons. And that's not the only resource out there for you. It is a resource. For a lot of women, you know, looking at lifestyle factors. Okay, if you have insomnia and it's not related to the hot flashes, menopause hormone therapy, not going to help you. What else can we look at? How can we change your sleep routine? How can you work on how you're thinking about your bed and what you do during that time period when you're awake? Like, what are you doing during those hours you're awake at night? How can we change that so that you're getting better sleep? How can we help you get better sleep and you know, more of it? So we look at that. We look at stress. Like, how can we help you decrease your stress? Okay, you have joint pain. What can we do about that? How do we help you arrange your workouts so that on days that you're feeling your best, you're pushing harder, and on days when you're really struggling with joint pain or fatigue, that you're pushing at a less intense level, but it's still appropriate for you? Like, how do we set that up for you? Putting all of these pieces together so that you're navigating this successfully is so important to success for weight loss and fitness and menopause. So yes, your hormones are impacting you, but it's not the death knell of you being able to be a fit person, being a person who loses weight, maintains a healthy weight. There's a lot of moving parts there that, you know, women of younger ages or men are not dealing with, but you can still be successful. People do it all the time.
And that myth is so disempowering because if you think, well, hormones are affecting me, there's nothing I can do about it, I'm just doomed to live in this body I'm not comfortable in forever.
Yeah.
Then you're probably not going to take any actions because you think there's nothing you can do versus this is going to cause extra challenges, but it's not, you know, impossible.
It's not impossible. And getting the support you need to help you with all of those various pieces, which, you know, they differ woman to woman what the pieces are. Some women, unfortunately, like me, I was a person who I have a huge range of symptoms. Other women, they just have one. And some women sail through and I'm thrilled for them, right?
Yeah.
Wherever you are, getting the help you need with those particular symptoms that you're struggling with so that you can then eat the protein and get the workout in and get in your deficit. All of that stuff is so important and it can for sure be done.
Right. One of the final questions I ask each of my guests is, in your opinion, what does it mean to make the health investment?
So for women, specifically women in the generation we're talking here, I think the top thing that comes to mind for me is choosing to put yourself first on your priority list. Not third, not fifth, not using the time after you've handled everybody else's needs so that you can, with that time and energy, get a walk and plan your food and go to the gym, because you're not going to make progress that way. And so putting yourself at the very top of your priority list, which means scheduling time in every week to plan your food and prep your vegetables and scheduling in, I'm taking a walk at these times and I'm going to the gym at these times, and really honoring those as appointments. And if somebody's like, hey, I want to shift our lunch to this time, and you're like, wait, that's when I'm actually at the gym, you know, being okay with just saying like, oh, I have an appointment then. And you don't need to get into it and be like, well, the appointment's with the weights in my basement, right? It's just, you have an appointment then, just like you would. You're not going to cancel your dentist appointment if your friend, if it's better for her to go at noon instead of one, right? You're not going to do that. So putting yourself at the top, nobody's going to lift the weights for you. Nobody's going to get the steps in for you. Not only are they not going to, they literally can't. And the only person who can do that for you is you. And yes, that thing that people say like, oh, put your own oxygen mask on first so you can help other people is 1000% true. It's true. If you're feeling your best, if you're feeling your fittest, you're going to be able to help other people more. You're going to be able to show up as a better version of yourself. And that's great. But even if you didn't show up better for other people, you're going to show up better for yourself. And that matters. You are important and you are valuable and you are worth it.
A critical word you said there also was schedule. I feel like we schedule everything else. And then we just think, oh, I'll just do this naturally. But I know for me, I literally schedule my walks because it's a challenging part for me. At the end of every day, I see my walk coming up. It's in a different color than my meetings throughout the day. I mentally prepare for it. That has made the biggest difference for me versus just, oh yeah, I know I need to go for a walk at the end of the day, but it's not in my calendar.
Yeah, I make a to-do list every day on my notes section, and those things are on there for me. Like, and for me as a person who's, you know, I have ADHD, and so I need everything. Like, literally on my list of things is like eat breakfast, and I'll cross it off my list. Like, go for a morning walk, go get, you know, get to the gym, like whatever thing is. I put those things right there with, like, I have a podcast with Brooke at 2 p.m. Like, those are on my to-do list every single day.
And then it feels great because I love the checking it off.
I love that. And I'm definitely guilty of, like, wait, I forgot to put something on there. Let me type that on so I can cross it off. Right?
And it feels so
it's
good.
It's a very important thing.
I agree. You got to get credit for all those tasks. Where can listeners follow and find you?
So you can find me at Kim Schlag Fitness on all the places. My last name, Schlag, is spelled S as in Sam, Chlag. I'm very active on Instagram. I have a podcast that's the Fitness Simplified podcast. But you can find me at Kim Schlag Fitness on my website, on YouTube, on TikTok, all those places at Kim Schlag Fitness.
Incredible. I will put links to all of those things in the show notes. I'm also going to link to your Instagram highlight video you mentioned on strength training for beginners, because I'm sure some people would love to click through that. And I don't know, I find that sometimes people don't know where those highlights are. You know, it's like...
Yes.
It's I mentioned the highlights.
Circles, ladies.
Yeah.
When you go to somebody, so if you click on my name and you're like, okay, this is her profile, you'll see like my face and then like a couple of words about me. And then there's all these little colorful bubbles. Colorful bubbles. Those are the highlights.
Yes. Awesome. There's all the social media terminology that we're trying to keep up with nonstop. Well, thank you so much for your time, Kim. Like I said, anytime I do any episode about menopause, weight loss after 40, anything on that topic, it's a huge hit. So I know you're going to help so many people, and we're just grateful for your time.
Thanks so much for having me, Brooke. This was great.
Well, that's all for today. Thanks again for joining me here on the Health Investment Podcast. I'm so grateful for each and every one of my listeners. On your way out, remember to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. See you next week. All content in this podcast was created for general informational purposes only by a non-physician. None of the content should serve as a substitute for professional medical advice, treatment, or diagnosis. Always consult a qualified health provider with any questions regarding a medical condition and before making changes to your diet, lifestyle, and/or exercise programs. Do not disregard any professional medical advice you have received or postpone seeking such advice because of something you heard on this podcast.